Our last appeal of the day is appeal number 21-2270, Pharmacyclics v. Alvogen. Mr. Gutman?
Yes, Your Honor.
You've reserved 5 minutes?
Yes, thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Zygmunt Gutman. I represent appellants, and with me is John Roberts, my colleague, and also from Alvogen is Andrea Sweet, the Vice President of Legal Affairs.
Just curious, if we affirm on any one of these patents, do you still want us to go forward and consider the validity of the other patents?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Assuming the patent that we affirmed on was the 857, which I think has the latest expiration date, is there any practical consequence of if we were not to address the other three patents?
There is, Your Honor. I think it's important to address the validity of all of the patents.
Because?
Well, not just because of Alvogen, but because of the importance that other generic pharmaceutical companies may, armed with that information, still be able to enter the market early, as Alvogen may be able to as well. So, given the amount of time that I have, I'll address four issues, specifically obvious written description and obviousness with respect to the 090 method of treatment patent, and inherent anticipation and obviousness with respect to the 455 crystal form patent. And I'll start with Claim 2 of the 090 patent, written description. Claim 2 is invalid for lack of written description. The court erred because the court erroneously failed to consider and properly apply the Blaze Marks Law, which required that the court objectively identify within the four corners of the specification of the 090 patent Blaze Marks that would allow APOSA to visualize Claim 2 from the scattered and disjointed claim elements that are strewn across the specification and the vast genus of methods of treatment that are discussed in the specification. The court erred because it used hindsight by using Claim 2 as a guide to walk through the specification and indiscriminately pick out various claim elements.
What's wrong with the passage in the summary of the invention at columns 4 to 5 for the 090?
Thank you, Your Honor. I was just about to address that. So that passage does not expressly disclose Claim 2. What that passage discloses, and by the way, both the court and appellees in their citation were even unable to identify fully all of the elements of Claim 2 in their cited passages, and I think that emphasizes the scattered nature of the disclosure. But putting that aside, that passage really is talking about a vast genus of methods of treatment. Within that passage is a disclosure of individual non-claim elements as well as claim elements that are included in specific embodiments for which the embodiments are never actually identified.
It calls out using ibrutinib at about 560 milligrams a day, doesn't it?
It does, Your Honor, but the claim is not merely directed to using ibrutinib at about 560 milligrams a day. The claim is a combination claim that combines many different elements, and what Claim 2 is directed to is a method of treating RR-MCL using about 560 milligrams per day orally administered. And that claim, as a combination, is nowhere actually described in the summary of invention.
The oral dose form that's missing from this one passage at column 4 to 5?
Well, the court actually missed two elements. The court missed the route of administration, oral, as well as the frequency of administration. The appellees actually did a little bit better at page 17 of their responsive brief, and they were able to identify the oral route of administration, but still failed to identify the frequency of administration.
Frequency, the number of milligrams per day.
Correct, Your Honor.
But doesn't column 5 say about 560 milligrams slash day? I mean, what else does that communicate to us other than using 560 milligrams a day, per day?
Well, the frequency of administration, Your Honor.
Oh, in other words, there's no suggestion that it has to be done every day? Is that the argument?
Frequency? Well, that it has to be done every day or how many times a day?
Oh, you could break it up, maybe divide 560 by 4, and then you could
exactly,
get
Your
four
Honor.
Separate doses.
That's right. And when you go down in the passage, you'll actually see that the summary of invention discusses that it could be a single dose or a divided dose. The passage in total is really discussing a vast genus of methods of treatment and different permutations where these claim elements are being mixed and matched to define the genus. And when you read through it, there is no disclosure actually of the claim to combination that is the method of treatment. The court never addressed in its decision the language used in the patent at the summary of invention regarding that these disparate claim elements are used in specific embodiments without mentioning what those embodiments are. In other words, where is claim two within this forest of possible methods of treatment? So the court turned to example 13 in order to try to find written description support for claim two. And example 13 is also a vast genus of methods of treatment. It talks about using a broad genus of BTK inhibitors, and the patent tells us what those BTK inhibitors are. I'll direct the court's attention to columns 45 through 46 of the 090 patent, where it discusses what a BTK inhibitor is. And notably, the discussion about what a BTK inhibitor is also employs this in some embodiments language without telling APOSA or anyone else, for that matter, what embodiments are being specifically addressed.
But imbrutinib is at least highlighted in the summary of invention, which, you know, maybe there could be arguments as to one of the other possible BTK inhibitors disclosed at column 45, and we could, you know, quibble about which one of those are actually part of example 13, but ibrutinib is at least spotlighted in the summary, which gives us some, I mean, I guess to use your word, blaze mark, to understand that perhaps we should think of example 13 in the context of what is described in the summary, i.e.
So,
ibrutinib.
So, Your Honor, the test is that the specification must objectively identify what the blaze marks are that would lead APOSA to visualize the claimed invention. I think Your Honor is referring to the court's conclusion that ibrutinib is somehow a preferred BTK inhibitor and therefore can be plugged into example 13. I don't believe that that is an appropriate objective inquiry. I think the court committed error in characterizing ibrutinib as a preferred BTK inhibitor. In fact, the specification in a different portion of the summary of invention at column 3, lines 1 through 30, talks about this vast genus of BTK inhibitors using the same language in some embodiments to exactly in the same way that the passage focused on by the court is talking about ibrutinib. In talking about the various methods of treatment. So, and additionally, the specification, and this goes to whether ibrutinib as a preferred BTK inhibitor can objectively be found within the specification. The patentee in this case knew how to signal what was preferred. When you look through the specification, there are different areas of the specification where the patentee indicated what was preferred or what was preferable.
Mr. Gutman, just to let you know, I'm going to do my best to hold you to your time. So if you want to get to anything else, I just want to let you know that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll move away from the preferred issue. But the one thing that I'll say about it also is that even if ibrutinib is a preferred BTK inhibitor, the court never found, and again, there's no objective indication within the four corners of the specification, that ibrutinib is a preferred BTK inhibitor for use in a method of treating RRMCL. So at best, the only thing that the court found was that ibrutinib was a BTK inhibitor, a preferred BTK inhibitor, excuse me. I'll move on to obviousness now. Claim 2 is obvious. The court erred by failing to conclude that Claim 2 was obvious in view of the presumption of obviousness, as well as admissions and other undisputed evidence of record.
There's an argument that the presumption of obviousness issue here was forfeited in the sense that you presented it below only in the context of an obviousness type double patenting theory and not in a classic 103 theory.
Yes, Your Honor. I understand that's an argument made by Appellees.
We can put that to the side. Go ahead with your argument.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Appellee's prior art 015 patent, including Claim 20, when combined with any one of the Appellee's prior art clinical trial references, discloses all the elements of Claim 2. The only allegedly novel aspect of Claim 2 is using about 560 milligrams of ibrutinib to treat RRMCL. But that amount, that dose, falls squarely within a disclosed range of doses in the 015 patent, and therefore is presumptively obvious.
Is the claim directed to treating relapsed MCL?
RR is relapsed and refractory,
right.
MCL,
RR,
Your Honor.
MCL?
Yeah.
It
I'm
is.
Sorry?
The claim in the 090 patent is directed to treating RRMCL.
It doesn't specifically call that out, but we've never made the argument
okay.
that it's not directed.
And the 015 patent disclosure and claim is not directed to RR per MCL.
Claim 20 is mentions MCL, which is a genus that would include RRMCL, as we argued in our briefing. It's a two-species genus.
The district court found differently, if I recall. Correct?
The district court found, I think, in error, that the MCL to which the Claim 20 was directed would not have included RRMCL, and more importantly, and this is really important, that the disclosure in the 015 patent, as well as the disclosure in the 090 patent, there's an admission within these patents that the amount of the dose, regardless of whether the presumption of obviousness applies, and regardless of the severity of the disease, excuse me, Your Honors, can be determined through routine experimentation. The 090 patent and the 015 patent are very clear on those points, that the severity of the disease, and appellees have conceded that, and the court agrees, that RRMCL is merely a more severe form of MCL. So the district court erred by not applying the presumption of obviousness. And if Your Honors determine that the presumption of obviousness applies, then Claim 2 is obvious for that sole reason. But even without the presumption, Claim 2 is still obvious in view of Appellee's binding admissions in both the 090 patent as well as the 015 patent that therapeutically effective amounts of ibrutinib can be determined through routine experimentation, not just routine experimentation, but the disclosures add on the fact, including the types of studies that were disclosed in the prior art clinical trial studies that we're relying on to demonstrate obviousness.
Your friend on the other side is going to get up and say, well, what happened here to discover the 560 milligram amount was a critical, unexpected discovery that was located and found through using non-routine techniques, not what is of a person of ordinary skill of art would have actually done, which would have been the routine types of experimentation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So even though you're out of time, can you quickly respond to that?
Yes. So first of all, this method is not directed to a method of discovering a dose. this method is discovered, is directed.
But the point is that through routine experimentation, you wouldn't have arrived at 560. You would have arrived at something else. You probably would have arrived at something much higher than 560.
So, Your Honor, first of all, the way that the inventors arrived at the claim is not relevant to how a POSA could have arrived at the claim. So the fact that the inventors here decided to take some path to identify about 560 milligrams as...
But it has something to do with the characterization of the dosage as being a product of routine experimentation, if in fact the method that was used was not routine at all.
Well, to be clear, the method that the inventors used may not have been routine, but that doesn't foreclose that there are other methods that are routine.
But didn't the district judge specifically find that the other methods would not have produced 560?
Well,
as a factual matter.
The district court found that usually, the district court did not say that always the MTD of this kind of phase one study must be used as the therapeutically effective dose. Even the district court acknowledged in the decision that it usually is, but doesn't have to be. And so the first point is that is not inconsistent with the patentee's admissions in the patented issue, as well as the prior art, that therapeutically effective amounts could be determined through routine experimentation, particularly in view of the additional guidance that those doses would typically fall within the range of 1 to 1,500 milligrams per day.
Okay, you're out of your time, so we will give you back your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sipes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Christopher Sipes, on behalf of the plaintiffs with me at council table is my colleague Erica Anderson. Linda Fridlieb of Pharmacyclics and AbbVie is here, as is Clara Jimenez of Janssen. Let me start first just to address the question that was said last, in which Mr. Gutman suggested that the court didn't find that routine dose escalation would not result in 560. In fact, at Appendix 45, the court found specifically, and this is a factual finding, had an artisan of ordinary skill conducted a routine dose escalation study for ibrutinib before the priority date, she would have escalated the dose amount to a dose far greater than 560 milligrams. So there is no question, and Alvarez has not shown clear error in that finding.
I guess the skilled artisan would have located 560 milligrams a day, right? I guess the point is that the POSITA would have just kept on going.
It's not clear that a POSITA would even have ever landed on 5-6 or anything about that. The way the 3x3 dose escalation study works, there's constant increases so that you don't check every number. You go to a certain number.
You jump.
So there is no testimony, let alone clear and convincing evidence, that a POSITA would ever have even tested 560. But the larger point is what the POSITA would have been looking for is the dose tolerable, not is it effective, or more importantly, is it a pharmacokinetic study that's saying, is the BTK kinase fully occupied? So there's no testimony that 560 would ever have been tried, but there is clear testimony that the POSA ends up with a dose well above 560. In fact, the MTD for ibrutinib has never been found, but it's been tested up to 840. So it's above 840. So what is clear is a routine dose escalation study, as the district court found, would end up with a dose far above. Whether 560 would ever have been tried, we have no idea. There's no evidence in the record as to that.
So is the unexpected advantage that you don't need as much of the ibrutinib to be effective?
It's more than that, Your Honor, because what distinguishes, the claim requires about 560. So the claim is directed to that dose. As the court found, this met a long-felt need for a treatment that was both effective and safe and tolerable, because the patient population we're talking about here are incredibly, they're elderly and vulnerable. Prior to ibrutinib, relapse refractory MCL was, in the court's word, a dismal outcome. The patients were not put too violent at death's door.
The 015 patent already disclosed the range.
that it disclosed a range.
That this 560 is inside it.
It is inside it, but it disclosed several things. It disclosed the range for MCL. And as I believe, Judge Chen, you pointed out, the district court found, which is true, that MCL and relapse refractory MCL are different diseases treated in different ways. That's, I think, in footnote 8 of the court's opinion. And so, one, it's a different disease. But two, if you look at the disclosure there, it's one, disclosing that a therapeutic effect could be found. It doesn't even suggest that it's a fixed amount. And the range is 1 to 1,500. And it may well be, with routine dose escalation, you could find a therapeutic dose, say 900 or 840. But would it be as safe? Would it be as effective, as tolerable as the dose that was found? We don't know, because it's never been tested clinically. What the 015 does not say is you can find the clinically optimal dose, the best dose, that way. And the district court made a number of findings. This was all presented. This argument was waived. It was never presented in obviousness. It was presented in the context of obviousness-type double patenting. And the court went on to consider it there and found specifically in that case that the 015 patent has a lot of differences, but more to the point that the range is so great that you would, POSA would never, from that range, ever have hit upon 560. And that's consistent with this court's case law. In Genetics Institute, it rejected an argued presumption because the facts here present a case where the disclosed range is so broad as to encompass a very large number of possible distinct compositions. In Allergan v. Sandoz, the disclosed ranges are so broad as to encompass a very large number of possible distinct compositions. So now we have a range. It's not even for RMCL. It's not even fixed daily dosing. It could be weight-based dosing, something very different, of 1 to 1,500. That broader range for a different disease, for a potentially different dosing regimen, will not lead a POSA to the about 560 milligrams a day. And the record shows...
The conclusion that there's been a rebuttal of the presumption of obviousness, is that a question of law or a question of fact?
So that was not teased out because of the odd way it was presented here. I believe at the end of the day, the question whether there is a presumption or not remains the same and the burden remains the same. They have the burden to show obviousness by clear and convincing evidence, and that the subsidiary factual findings are factual ones. That would include factual questions about whether or not, even if there's a presumption, a POSA would hit upon, from the disclosed range, the claimed about 560. We believe that's a factual question. So you can view that as either it's rebutted based on all the differences between the disclosure and the claim, or the presumption should have applied in the first place. You end up in the same place, which is you cannot take a teaching that says for a wide range of conditions, a therapeutic dose of 1 to 1,500 milligrams may be used. Could be fixed, could be daily dosing, it's first line MCL, and arrive at treating relapsed refractory MCL with a fixed daily dose of 560 milligrams per day. Now let me make it, I don't want to move on if there's still questions, but I do want to address the written description argument, because I think there were substantial misstatements both about what the district court found and what's in written description that are important. First of all, the district court found, and this is important, that example 13, when read in light of the remainder of the written description, enables and describes Claim 2 of the 090 patent. And that is correct. The example 13 describes a protocol for treating relapsed refractory MCL with the fixed daily dose of 560 milligrams with capsules, which is an oral administration. The court found that that is everything about Claim 2 except which BTK. It just says a BTK inhibitor. Which BTK inhibitor. And either supporting evidence, for example, from Dr. Rule, the district court credited at Appendix 15065 that says following example 13 with ibrutinib is the same as the method of claim 2. It has the 560 milligrams. Now, it's 560 not about, but of course, in carrying something out, you get variation. It's fixed daily dosing, so you get the, you know, once a day, 560 milligrams per day. The only challenge in Alvagen's brief to the connection here, and this is its opening at 15 in reply 4, what they challenge is the conclusion that a person with skill reading this would recognize the inventors in possession of carrying out example 13 with ibrutinib. But here's the problem they have, and the court made extensive fact findings on this. As it found in Appendix 46, there's one and only one BTK inhibitor identified by name for the treatment of relapsed and refractory MCF, and that's ibrutinib. That's its finding. So ibrutinib is the only BTK inhibitor identified by name in the summary of the invention and is the only BTK identified for the treatment of RRMCL. So this is a pretty clear blaze mark. The court's word was preferred, but what is the patent singles out by name only one BTK inhibitor for the treatment of RRMCL, which immediately connects it to Example 13, the treatment of RRMCL. This is a blaze mark where you have only one trail, right? If you want to get to the land of treating RRMCL, and Example 13 tells you how to treat RRMCL, the written description describes a single trail by name, and that single trail is ibrutinib. It's hard to imagine clearer connection. It's not scattered between the patent. There's two places in the patent that repeat the fact that ibrutinib is the BTK inhibitor that's called out by name for the treatment of RRMCL.
Is it your view that in Example 13, when it talks about BTK inhibitor, quote-unquote, that equals ibrutinib?
No, what I would say is...
written description support for any other BTK inhibitor?
I haven't considered other ones. If a claim was to using a BTK inhibitor generally for the treatment of RRMCL, perhaps Example 13 would give support for such a broad claim. I don't know. I haven't thought about that. There's no other BTK that I'm aware of. This is not an issue I've spent a lot of time thinking about, but the court found, I believe it's correct, that there's no other BTK called out for RMCL. So I believe it called out a different BTK inhibitor, not ibrutinib, but some other BTK inhibitor. There would be no support for that. Because as far as the court found is my reading, as Dr. Rule's testimony says, he too testified, there's one and only one BTK inhibitor called out in the patent expressly for the treatment of RRMCL, and that's ibrutinib. And that's clear, example four, in column four rather, this is at appendix 18269, that chemical name is ibrutinib. And then it says specifically, in identifying, it says is useful for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is relapsed or refractory diffuse B-cell, relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma. So it's calling out by name. In example five, you can find also the idea that you can use ibrutinib at 560 milligrams a day, orally once a day. Then if you go to column 29, this is appendix 18282.
Where's the orally once a day that you just referenced?
Okay, so orally so it's appendix 18270. Yeah. That's column 5 at line 19. Is administered orally.
Right.
It's also about...
one a day.
Okay, yep. And then...
yeah, the next two
that.
Lines lower.
Yeah. Okay. But also, and Dr. Rule's testimony shows this, example 13, by saying a fixed... example 13 says a fixed daily dosing regimen of BTK inhibitor capsules. The capsule is oral. And the fixed daily dosing, that's once a day. It doesn't say twice a day, three times a day, divided dose. So you have all of... everything of claim two.
Meaning a fixed daily dose is once...
So... I'm just going by the trial testimony. I don't want to claim any expertise I don't have. As I understand it, this is a phase two protocol, and I'm just going by what Dr. Rule testified and what the court found is a POSA reading example 13 would understand it to disclose everything in claim two, except the identity of ibrutinib. And I believe the fixed daily dosing refers to the fact that you give it once. It doesn't say divided dose. And fixed means it's not by weight. It's the same dose for every
patient.
It's not by weight of patient.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I understand.
You're correct. In fact, there are other kind of phase one trials. If you look at example 7, which is the phase one trial, that's by weight. One of the challenges they have for the 015 is the 015 patent actually describes altering the dose, therapeutic dose by weight. So it's calling out that it's a fixed dose. You give 560 to everyone. And because it's a daily dose, it's not a divided dose. In the context of this example 13, it's once a day. So it's disclosing everything but choosing ibrutinib. And both in column 4 and column 29, ibrutinib is singled out, and there's no other call out of another BTK inhibitor for use of RRMCL. It's hard to imagine anything that's more a blaze mark, if you will. I mean, I don't want to, as I respect this court statement in Starflex that you review judgments, not opinions. I'm not trying to rewrite the court's opinion. The court found that APOSA would connect BTK to example 13 because in the court's words, it's preferred. I think what that means is when you look at the patent, you come to the conclusion that it's telling you if you're going to treat RRMCL, pick out ibrutinib. And one thing that is clear is it's not a laundry list. It's in a passage that refers only to ibrutinib for treating RRMCL. And it repeats that in column 29, that ibrutinib is for use in treating RRMCL. That's pretty clear linkage to carry out the protocol for treating RRMCL in example 13 with ibrutinib. Now, it goes beyond that, because in column 5, each of the elements that are in example 13 and in claim 2 are also called out as something that ibrutinib is suitable for. But the real point here is you have a protocol that tells you how to treat RRMCL, and then you have a single with a BTK inhibitor, and then you have the description that it is that the one BTK inhibitor that's called out in the court's words for treating RRMCL is ibrutinib. A post is going to understand to connect those two and recognize that the inventors are at least in possession of carrying out example 13 with ibrutinib, that is applying ibrutinib to treat RRMCL with a fixed daily dose of 560 milligrams per day orally, you know, as capsules. And so that simply is the written description here. Now, Mr. Goodman had suggested he wanted to talk about inherent disclosure. I don't think he got into it there, so I'm happy to rest on our briefs unless the court has any questions about inherent anticipation in the crystalline form. Thank you, Your Honor.
So my friend on the other side spent quite a bit of time mentioning that ibrutinib is the only named compound associated with treating RRMCL. That's incorrect. Let's take a look at column 4 and column 5 of the 090 patent, which is the beginning of the summary of invention. That is the focus of this discussion. So, first of all, I want to reiterate that even plaintiffs couldn't identify all the claim elements in the summary of invention that make up claim 2. And I think that speaks volumes about the difficulty that someone, APOSA, would find in identifying objectively blaze marks within the four corners of the specification to be able to visualize claim 2. If the appellees, who have every incentive to do it, couldn't do it, how could APOSA do it? Now, turning to column 4, what column 4 says, and actually before I get to that, you know, one of the things here is why didn't the inventors here disclose in the specification claim 2 clearly? How difficult would it have been for the inventors to say, in one embodiment of a method of treatment, is using approximately 560 milligrams of ibrutinib per day to treat RRMCL? Why wasn't that done? And the reason why it wasn't done, this is a classic example of a failure to properly identify blaze marks. Because what was happening was the inventors wanted to try to disclose many different permutations and a vast genus of method of treatments that it could then claim later on. And in fact, example 13 is a prophetic example. It's not a working example. That protocol was never done. And it's only referred to in connection with using the broad genus of BTK inhibitors. But going back to column 4, what column 4 says is at lines 62 is, starting with line 59, in certain embodiments is the method for treating relapsed or refractory non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, not RRMCL, a genus of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, in an individual in need thereof, comprising administering to the individual a therapeutically effective amount of ibrutinib. Okay, so it's saying you can use ibrutinib to treat a genus of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now let's go to the next line. The next line says, in some embodiments, but it doesn't tell you what those embodiments are. All it says is, in some embodiments, the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is relapse or refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, or relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma, or relapsed or refractory follicular lymphoma. All that sentence says, and by the way, ibrutinib is not mentioned in that sentence, and all that sentence says is that in some embodiments, and we don't know what they are, and we don't know whether they pertain to using ibrutinib, include those species of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So that is hardly a clear statement that the specification is expressly disclosing the use of ibrutinib to treat RR-MCL, let alone using about 560 milligrams of ibrutinib to treat RR-MCL. And then as you go...
It's called RR-MCL right there, right?
I'm sorry, excuse me, Your Honor?
It does call out RR-MCL when it says relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma.
It does, but it says in some embodiments, the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma could be RRMCL, but it doesn't tell you what embodiments. It doesn't tell you that the embodiment that could be used to treat RRMCL is an embodiment that includes ibrutinib, or does it include something else, like one of the other many BTK inhibitors that are identified in the specification. And so this sentence, all this sentence says is that in some embodiments, the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma can include RRMCL. But it doesn't tell you that the in some embodiments that are being referred to there are embodiments in which ibrutinib is used to treat RRMCL. And that's a defect all throughout the specification. And it emphasizes the classic nature of the Blasemarks problem here, where here the inventors are seeking a claim for which they were not in possession based on an objective inquiry into the four corners of specification. Because what happened here was that the inventors were trying to claim different permutations. And I'll again direct the court's attention to column 3, lines 1 through 30, where it uses the same language about, it says, in some embodiments, the hematological malignancy is relapsed or refractory DLBCL, relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma, relapsed or refractory follicular lymphoma. And then it says, in some embodiments, the BTK inhibitor forms a covalent bond. So the point is, if you read the summary of invention at column 3, it tracks the language that was used in columns 4 and 5 regarding in some embodiments, but instead of ibrutinib, it's talking about BTK inhibitors.
Okay, and I think we have your argument. Your time has expired a few minutes ago.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted, and that concludes today's session.